So you guys ready to get back, jump back into Moshe? It's been a while, hasn't it? We've been like, Mike is pumped. Thank you for the gratuitous excitement. It's been a couple weeks we've taken off because we've started this journey now a while back. And we've spent 6 weeks talking about Moses, the God follower, the story of Moses. And it's been really significant, I think, for me as I've been shocked by some of the things and the insights that I've gathered through exploring this story from a different perspective. I think in the past I've seen the story of Moses and I've read this stuff and been through the book of Exodus several times, but I've always kind of seen it and interpreted it more from a historical perspective. But going through it again, my eyes have been opened to how Moses is really so symbolic to the spiritual journey overall. And really, that's kind of the way that the Jews, even still today, look at and understand the story of Moses. For the Jewish people, they consider the book of Exodus as the beginning of their story. If you go to the Jews and say, hey, tell me about the beginning, they don't go to the book of Genesis. They would start in the book of Exodus. For them, Genesis is kind of like the prologue, right? It's kind of like the introduction and paragraph, which is kind of incredible because in the book of Genesis is where Abraham and Isaac and Jacob's stories are. This is where they have, this is where they could consider them the patriarchs or their fathers. And so Abraham is their father, but Moses is their prophet. And what the Jewish people would consider is that Moses' story is their story. And so this is really insightful because you guys, as you know, St. Paul, who is a Jewish man, he begins to talk and he says that as Christians, that we have been grafted into the vine. In other words, that the people of God, the Jewish people, were like this vine. And we have been, even as Gentiles, been grafted into. We weren't born into this people, but we have been chosen to be grafted or been put into a part of it. He even goes on to say, I think it's in the book I wrote down, book of Galatians. He says that those who have faith are children of Abraham. And so in other words, what Paul is trying to tell us is that their story is also our story. And Moses' story becomes this prototype then of a spiritual journey. And so it really kind of becomes like a roadmap for us. That we can plot our course, that we can look at Moses' journey, and from that we can gain some insights into what our spiritual journey is like and will be like. And it's really helpful. You can see where you are kind of in the progress of understanding your own spiritual journey. And so today what I want to do is I want to look at Moses' life because there was a trajectory, right? There was a plot that was unfolding. Now, I don't think Moses always was able to see that, but his life was headed somewhere. And what I want to do today is take a look backwards and so we can kind of see the bigger story of Moses' life and looking back, kind of get an idea then of how we can move forward as we move now into the next phases of Moses' journey. And so Moses' life, it kind of unfolded in these big chunks. I'm not so sure that's like an actual theological, I don't know if that's the theological name for it, but there were these seasons of life in Moses' story. There was almost like it was one big song, let me get overture with many different movements. And so there was these different kind of phases, I guess, we'll just call them phases today. And these phases in Moses' story happened in 40-year chunks. Now, for the ancient Jews, this would have been incredibly significant and symbolic. The number 40 was really symbolic to them. And so, as moderners, when we read the text and it says for 40 years Moses wandered in the desert, we're like, oh, that was a long time. But for the Jewish people, they would have instantly recognized that the number 40 carries with it a lot of significance and a deeper meaning than just telling them how long it was. That God was trying to speak to them that this was a significant movement. And again, in this grand overture, it was a distinct phase of Moses' spiritual journey. And so there were these 40-year periods that would have immediately stood out to the early readers of these texts. So I want to kind of take a look at them. The first 40-year chunk of Moses' life was Moses growing up in Egypt. So we talked about this. Do my best to make this legible. But there was a lot of things that happened in Moses' life for the first 40 years in Egypt. If you remember, Moses was saved from the Nile as a baby. He grew up in Pharaoh's household as the grandson of Pharaoh. He became a military leader and won all these military campaigns. He was educated with the finest education that the world had to offer. There were all of these things. And again, I think Moses didn't really have a context in which to understand these events as it was happening to Moses. It was just his life. Right. This was just Moses' real life. This was the environment that Moses finds himself in, and similar to all of us. you were just kind of dropped into this world, right? Maybe in Muncie, Indiana, or you know, wherever you were from, and but now you're here. And so there's this context that you were born into. You didn't choose your parents. You didn't choose to be born into the family that you were born into, but that's the context, it's the package in which your story begins. And this is what Moses finds himself in for the first 40 years. And if you remember, there was that time, we talked about this, there was an interesting event in this time in Egypt where Moses, it says Moses saw his own people. That's significant in Moses' story. You'll see that Moses has this ability to try to see things that other people don't see. Moses saw his own people being abused by this Egyptian taskmaster. Remember, it says he saw it. Like it. And all of a sudden, he had this awareness that there was an injustice that was transpiring. He recognized that the Hebrews was actually where he belonged. And so he sees his own people being mistreated. And remember, he commits murder. So these big major events. So his life now, he's been marked as a murderer. He grows up in this family he's been adopted into, but he doesn't really belong. He kind of feels out of sync in his own life and an alien in his own world. And so this is kind of, I would say that this part of Egypt right here, this is about Moses' person. This is about his life. Or maybe you could say this is the environment that shaped who he was. In the first 40 years is Moses dealing with the environment that shapes him, dealing with who he was. And you see that Moses then begins to be a certain type of person. He has this sense of compassion, a sense for justice, and that God was preparing Moses in ways that he couldn't even really understand. We talked about how it probably seemed like 40 wasted years to Moses, but yet it prepared him. Like he never knew that he would need the context in the royal palace, the contacts that he had, until he comes back later to be their deliverer. He probably had no idea why he was getting this world-class education in religion and the arts until he becomes the leader of this people that forms the most influential religion that the world has ever seen. But he had no idea. He had no idea how to understand that in the moment. This was just the environment that Moses was in. And so the first step of Moses' spiritual journey was the shaping of his person, his character. What type of man was Moses going to become? Who was he really? He was answering these questions. And God's shaping him through his environment. But then he goes into the next phase of his life, the next 40 years. The Bible tells us that Moses spends the next 40 years wandering in the Midian wasteland. So remember, he committed murder, and so Pharaoh finds out. And so Moses escapes to the land of Midian. And so we'll just say this is a wasteland. Who's the good way? And he spent the next 40 years in wandering through this Midian wasteland. And there, again, there's a lot of key events that transpired during this time that we talked about. He becomes a shepherd, remember? He gets married. He has a son. He names his son Gershom. Remember, we talked about Gershom was a Hebrew word that meant alien or stranger. So here Moses, even though he's got a family now, he still doesn't really have a home. He's not settled. You can see that he's still wrestling with who he is. And he spends these next 40 years as a shepherd, primarily just spending time alone in solitude. Shepherds spend the biggest portion of their lives out in a pasture with the sheep, miles away from home, and maybe making it home once a season, and he just spends his time in solitude. And this is God beginning to do a lot of work on Moses' inside. As a matter of fact, I would say this section of Moses' life was primarily about Moses' soul. Moses has a son, and he names his son foreigner or stranger. And you can see that Moses now is carrying all the baggage from the life in Egypt, the person he had become. And now he's bringing it into this place where he begins to wrestle. And he's asking all these questions. You know, who am I? Who has God created me to be? What has God created me to do? And he's carrying along all this baggage from the past. You remember we talked about how when he arrives in Midian, the women at this well, they mistake him as an Egyptian. So here he was, he's an Egyptian, he's from Egypt, but he's not really an Egyptian. And then he goes off to be with his kind of his own people, but he's not even really, they think he's an Egyptian. He doesn't really fit anywhere. To the Egyptians, he's a Hebrew, and to the Hebrews, he's an Egyptian. And he's wrestling now, trying to figure out these deep questions of the soul. And God wants to heal Moses' soul. God spends these 40 years trying to break through some of the baggage that Moses is carrying. If you remember, we talked about that God cares more about you than what you do. So God wants to heal Moses' soul and help Moses come to terms with the real life or the setting, the environment, all the things that the hand that Moses was dealt. So God, the next step is Moses begins to deal with that. And then phase three happens. Faith, remember one day Moses is wandering out in the Midian wasteland and he notices a bush that's on fire, but yet it's not being consumed. And he has, again, Moses now has this ability to see what other people might miss. We talked about the Hebrew word, again, that the text uses about Moses. It's ra'ah, and it means to see, but to see with your soul. Moses saw beyond the natural into the supernatural, and he said that he could see that this bush was unlike any other bush. He saw beyond the limitations of the natural realm, and he could see that he recognized that God was there. And what he recognizes is that actually God had been there all along. And so this third phase, this third movement in Moses' life was this moment at the bush. And this is the time in Moses' life where, I think maybe you could say, if you want to make a parallel to our spiritual journey, Moses becomes a believer, right? He has this encounter with God where he realizes that God is there, God is moving, even in these past times where he thought it was just a waste, where he thought he was trapped in an Egyptian world that didn't fit, but all of a sudden he recognizes that there was a plan and there was a purpose and that God was doing something. And so he has this ability to ra'ah. We said that ra'ah, to see, means to be open. That you have to have your eyes open, that you have to have your soul in a position where you're willing to see. Like the willingness to see comes before the ability to see. And this was something that I think a lot of times that we maybe get out of order in our life. We talked about how Moses, remember, he saw the bush, ra'ah, he saw this bush was on fire. And then it says in Exodus chapter 3, verse 4, this says that we're Exodus chapter 3, that he moved closer, that when he saw the bush, he moved closer to investigate that bush, right? He moved in, he wanted to see what's going on. And then in verse 4, it says, when the Lord saw that Moses had gone over to look, God spoke to him. That God didn't speak until Moses responded. And I think this is so significant in our spiritual journeys, because a lot of times we want to do that backwards. We want to say, God, if you speak to me, like, show me you're there, God. Like, tell me that you're there and I will follow. But Moses actually was the opposite. He had the ability to see that there was something beyond. And it was only after he responded to God that God spoke to him. And so I would say this third phase is about Moses' calling. Remember, God says, I am sending you. I'm going to do something in your life. I want to make your... Put that there. I want to make your life significant. I want to make your life matter. Now, that's just to give you some context. But here's the important thing. Notice that the first three phases of this journey, all of these three things, they're all centered or focused on one area, and that's Moses. All of this was about Moses, right? Moses' life, the environment that Moses was in, the baggage that Moses was carrying from his past, Moses' soul, the awakening inside of his spirit, the things that brought relief to all those questions that had haunted him. And Moses' calling, the things that Moses was going to do to make his life significant. And the spiritual journey that Moses was on, it began with this very inward focus on me. It began with this focus on what God is going to do in my life. It's all about Moses. But it didn't end there. Look what it says here in Exodus chapter 3, verse 10, if we move a little bit forward in the text. Here's what God says. So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, back out of Egypt. Moses had to go back to Egypt. And this is really where I want to get to today, because in order for us to understand the trajectory of our spiritual journey, we have to understand that these three phases that Moses was in of his spiritual journey, they were all significant, they were important, they're beautiful. God does a lot of amazing things, but the spiritual journey was never designed to be primarily about us, but that God is taking us and leading us back into Egypt. And there's really a great danger in our spiritual journey when we get stuck in one of these first three phases. And you see, you may be able to diagnose this in your own life. You should probably certainly have seen this in other people's lives. But you can kind of get trapped, or you can get stuck in one of these first three phases of the spiritual journey. Like, you can get stuck here in this first part, where it's all about your life and your person, and the things that God is doing inside of you. This is the spiritual journey, when it's about the environment that shapes you. And spirituality then begins to recognize, well, wait a minute, the environment that shapes us is really critical to our spiritual well-being. And so you can see that there's a huge emphasis then on what I'm going to do. And this is super important, right? This is where God begins to shape your character. This is where God begins to give you the insights into how you're actually supposed to live in this world. How do you really live well in this world? And so you'll see in religious environments, there can be kind of a focus on this first movement. You'll see things like a focus on the rules, a focus on discipline, a focus on conduct and behavior and orthodoxy. And that's all, it's all very important. But you can see that in a lot of religious environments then, there might be this tendency to have all the emphasis on Bible training, Bible knowledge, preaching and teaching and shaping a biblical worldview. This is kind of where this realization that the environment we're in is critical is why you might get like some religious coalition who is boycotting a particular store because they don't like their bathroom policy. It's this understanding that, hey, the environment that we're in, like the real life conditions of our world, has some impact. And so you can see what happened. And listen, and that first step of the spiritual journey was critical to Moses' life. That's important. But it wasn't supposed to end there, right? And have you ever seen a religious institution or a spiritual environment that seemed like it was putting all of its emphasis right here? You can think of what it would be like to see if a church would get stuck in this first phase of all the emphasis in protecting this biblical worldview or this biblical world. We're not supposed to get stuck there. Sometimes you get stuck in the second area, this area of the soul. And it's really easy because this is about our spiritual formation and our spiritual practices. So this is about things like salvation and evangelism and forgiveness and worship and prayer and grace. And this is super important, right? This is those things that we do that help us to connect to God, and we realize that we are redeemed and that we are loved, and we begin to practice these ideas of grace. And so the second area, this is where you would see religious institutions having a focus on things like worship and prayer. It's those things that connect me to the God, to connect me to the sense of the transcendent. And so it's all the spiritual disciplines that we use to help us find a place where we belong. And it's super important, right? It's really critical to our spiritual journey. But you could see what it would be like if a church got stuck there, where it was just about creating environments where people could come and feel the presence of God, and it was creating these ecstatic moments where you could really feel something. And then they had to figure out new and bigger ways to do it, and finally they've got lasers and whatever they could do to help you connect to this transcendent, mysterious moment because of the emphasis of maybe getting trapped into phase two. And it's beautiful and it's important and it's critical to your spiritual journey, but you were never designed to stop the journey there. And if you're not careful, you can even get trapped in the third part of your spiritual journey, where you have this awakening to that your life was designed to matter, right? That you have this sense that God wants to do something in you. I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. And so there's this sense of purpose and this sense of destiny. I'd even maybe say that this third thing is this focus in religious institutions to focus on creating a sense of meaning and destiny in the people that come. And so you can see how a church or a religious group might begin to focus there and focus on things like sacrifice and giving, because you have a calling, you have a purpose and destiny and purpose. And it might result in things like raising funds and building bigger buildings, and it might result in things like recruiting people to teach class, recruiting people to play an instrument, all ways that you can kind of give back and create some meaning and significance right here in our little bubble. And it's super important and it's critical. And by the way, you should do that because we desperately need helpers all the time. And you should do that. But the spiritual journey was never supposed to stop there. See, Moses' story did not end at the bush. It continued to phase four. And so to find out where that is, we're going to read Exodus chapter 4. And I'm just going to read the first 14 verses if you have a Bible and you want to follow along. If not, Amanda will put it on the screen if my big head's not blocking you. But I want to read, this is a little bit of a longer section, but I want us to get a sense of how Moses responds. Where we had left Moses off is that he's having this encounter at the burning bush. God begins to speak to him. God says, I'm going to send you Moses. I'm sending you back to Pharaoh. Now, you can understand, if you have just gone through this journey, like you feel like, I just got out of here, right? I just have spent the last 80 years of my life, 40 years living it, 40 years dealing with all the baggage, all the pain, all the regrets, all the frustrations, all the questions that I picked up dealing with real life. Spent 40 years in the presence of God trying to work out all these problems. And then God at the bush says, I'm sending you back to Egypt, right? So you can imagine why Moses at first is a bit reluctant. And many times, as a matter of fact, several times, I think two times in chapter 3, Moses says, God, I'm not sure that you've got the right guy. And then we're going to continue the story in chapter 4. So Moses answered, So God had said, I'm sending you. So chapter 4 begins with Moses' answer. What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say the Lord did not appear to you? Now, I think that's a valid question. Because what Moses is saying here, he's not saying, God, I'm not sure that I believe. He was saying, God, I'm not sure that they're going to believe. That's a valid question. And just like this, like the song that we listened to earlier, like, you know, I want to go. I'm down for helping my people, but I'm not sure how to do it. How am I really going to go to them and help them and not just make things worse for them? I don't know. I believe God, but I'm not sure that they're going to believe. So in verse number 2, the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, throw it on the ground. We're going to talk about this some more next week, but I just love this. Just throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake. And he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake and it turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Then the Lord said, put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become as white as snow. Now, put it back into your cloak, he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, if they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, then take some water from the Nile, pour it on dry ground, and the water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. So God essentially says, let me just give you this bag of tricks. I'll teach you some really cool things. Like, this is going to blow their minds, Moses. And so Moses has another, he's going to respond to God one time. He's like, well, verse number 10, Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant. Now what's it mean? Here's what Moses is saying. He's like, listen, can you let me off the hook? Like, can you pardon me? Can you remove this responsibility from me? In other words, like, not me. Pardon your servant. Like, just, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. And then verse number 14. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses. Now that verse fascinates me. The Lord's anger burned against Moses. Moses did not want to serve, and God was not pleased. And I think this is so fascinating, because if you think about it, Moses spent 40 years of his life living in Egypt, and living not even in Egypt, he was living as an Egyptian. He wasn't worshiping the one true God. He wasn't conducting himself according to all the Jewish kosher laws. And apparently in the Bible, God didn't say a thing about that. Remember, not only did Moses live in Egypt, but Moses was part of the 1%, right? Moses' cush lifestyle was built upon the backs of the subjugation of his own people. And the Bible doesn't even say God was frustrated. Think about that. Moses committed murder. Moses was a murderer, and the Bible doesn't even say that God got angry. But when Moses refused to serve, God's anger burned against Moses. See, here's the point. When Moses got stuck in one of these three areas, God got angry. When Moses' spiritual journey stalled out in these first three overtures, these first three movements, the first three phases, God got angry. And so I wonder, what was God think? What would God say to the church today? I sometimes step back, and I don't want to just be a critic because it's easy to be a critic, but I wonder, what would God say to the church today? I put this on, some of you guys have put this on Facebook, but I came across this cartoon it's been a while. I've had this on my desktop, and I just opened it up and read it every once in a while. And I've had it sitting on my desktop for I don't know how long, but this is, then Jesus said, in order to help the poor, we need a massive auditorium with 5 projectors, a state-of-the-art sound system, laser lights, 6 smoke machines, and a Christian rock band. And I read that, and I think, what would God think about the church today? Because I think it would probably be so easy for us to become a church that is self-absorbed and so worried about ourselves and focused on what God's doing in our lives and focused on building bigger and better and more and focused on... I just want to look down and say, what a bunch of self-absorbed, selfish, inwardly focused people. I wonder if he looks down and say, that sees a church that's shallow. I wonder if he looks down and sees a church that's just an exercise of missing the point, majoring on the minors. Like, are we missing the point? See, I think that most of what we all hate about religion starts right here. I think when you meet that person in Starbucks or at work or whatever, and they're like, oh man, you're a Christian, immediately what's in their mind is that it's a group of people that is all focused on all the wrong things. Well, there are people who are hurting, and there are people who are starving, and then there are people who are alone, and there are people without any friends, and you're so worried about protecting your little Christian worldview, or you're so worried about building your Christian bubble that you're completely ignoring the pain all around you. And I think that most of what the world hates about religion is because of spiritual journeys that have stalled out in phase one, phase two, phase three. And here's the thing. These three phases are super important. They are good. They're beautiful. They're important. But phase four is mandatory. You can't stop at three. You've got to move on to here. These are important, but this is mandatory. Phase four. Surf. And I think that most of you guys are like, well, yeah, dumb. And you can kind of see that coming a million miles away. But phase four, that's mission critical, right? One, two, and three, that's important. But they're not the point. Serving is the point. Which really kind of creates an interesting spiritual conflict for a lot of us. Because, and it's really super tough to accept. And I find in Christianity, you know, the spiritual people, it's often difficult for us to accept this truth. And here's the truth. You're not the point. Serving is the point. Others are the point. And in our world, in our culture, this is difficult, if not impossible, for most of us to accept that you're not the point of God's mission. And I hate to even say that because I know how vile that comes across sounding in our community, in our culture. But we have this idea that because we crave significance and because we crave to feel special, that we in our culture, the way that we show love, the way that we show respect is through significance, right? And so when somebody does something, you know, really special, we honor them, and you put them on a pedestal, and on your birthday, you go to the place, and they put a special hat on your head, and they sing you the song, because that's the way in our culture we show love, and we show respect, is we try to say it's about you. It's just about you. We're going to make this moment all about you. And that just is so contrary to the movement of our spiritual journey that's trying to make it not all about you. And so because we live in this world where the way we show love and the way that we receive love and the way that we show respect and feel respect is by having is through significance, we develop this kind of idea that says, well, if God loved me, I would be the point. Like if God really wanted to show his love to me, he would make it about me. He would make my life, my problems, my needs, my frustrations, I would be the point. Like if God loved me, you see what happens. And as we begin to think the spiritual journey is going to be about us. And so it seems reasonable then that we would say, God, if you loved me, you would demonstrate that love through making me significant. Look what the Bible says, Romans chapter 5, verse 8. But God demonstrates his own love in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. See, how God demonstrates his love is through selfless sacrifice. That he gave of himself to sacrifice. So the way that God demonstrates love is not through saying, you are the most... And does God love you? Yes. Are you special? Yes. Does God want us to feel like we matter? Absolutely. But the point was not you. There's a bigger point. And I think a lot of times we stagnate in our spiritual journey because phase one, two, and three, it's about me. And it makes me the point. It makes my journey and my healing and my calling and my life and my grace and my forgiveness. And I become the point of the journey. But God demonstrates his love through sacrifice. And then God invites us into a life where we experience that same sacrificial life and we find meaning. So in other words, we find our meaning not in what God gives to us, but in what we give to the world. And that's a critical transition in the spiritual journey. As a matter of fact, I would say that more people's spiritual journey falls apart right at this place than any other thing. I can't tell you countless times I have had hundreds of meetings in Starbucks because of this. I've seen so many of my friends, people that I cared about, students in my youth group, people that's been at Dialogue, and they have fallen off on their spiritual journey because of this one little spot. That we find meaning and significance in what we in serving, in what we give, by God inviting us into it. And so many times we're looking for God, make me feel special, meet my needs, answer my prayers. We're stuck in phase one, two, and three. And we never transition to that fourth phase. And sometimes we'll do it. Sometimes we can even get to the phase four, and we'll go through the motions because we know it's what we're supposed to do. And you'll hear somebody get up here and make an announcement how badly we need help. And you're like, all right, I'll show up and I'll paint a bridge if I have to. But going through the motions isn't what this is about. It's when you come to the place where you actually enter into the sacrificial lifestyle, where you can begin to derive your purpose and meaning and actually find love and significance through serving others. Listen, this must radically change how we experience and practice spirituality. The spiritual journey is more than prayers, it's more than forgiveness, it's more than inner transformation, it's more than worship and kumbaya and saying your prayers. It's about service. It's about service. See, this is why we call this, motion to God follower, right? Yeah, I haven't really had a chance to get to this yet in this series. I haven't even really referenced the fact that it's Moshe is Hebrew or is Egyptian name, but he was a God follower. But we named it this not because Moses followed God's rules, not because Moses followed God's law, because Moses followed God's heart, because he followed God on God's mission into the world. That Moses recognized that God was doing something that's bigger than me. And Moses said, I'm going to apply myself to this journey. I'm giving myself to this mission. See, following God is more than... Bless you. She does. Following God is more than following his law. It's about following his heart. And that's stage four. Now listen, this is a critical shift in our spiritual journey. And like I said earlier, many people miss it. So many people miss it. I've described it a lot of times. I try to describe it as if it is like it's like a light switch that flips. It's just a switch that'll flip in your soul. And sometimes it's so imperceptible that you won't even notice it. That things will begin to change. And I think there's a lot of reasons for it. I was thinking, man, why do we miss this? And there's a lot of reasons. I think serving is a hassle, gets in the way. It takes a lot of time. Serving is sacrifice, so it costs money, costs your time, costs your energy. You could be doing a whole lot of other things that focused on you, right? Like all that money, when you give, that money could be going for something you. So it could be very easily spent on phase one, two, or three, you. It costs your time, which you would be much happier to go see, you go see my family, go hang out with girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever, because serving kind of, it presses in on you. Because it requires this complete and utter transformation of how you see and experience the divine. Serving not only is not just about money and time, it's about your pride. Sometimes you have to lower yourself to do something you don't really want to do. Maybe you don't really want to be the person that stands at the door, or really want to be the person that changes the diapers, or really want to be the person, that's what it requires of you. And so serving is a hassle and serving is costly. But for whatever reason, I've seen so many people who miss this shift. And it's so sad. They start exploring their faith, and it's wonderful, Like, you see those people, they begin the spiritual journey, and they come to church, and, at first, they're there every week, and God is doing these things in their lives, and it's beautiful, and it's wonderful, and they sing the songs, and the songs are intimate, and they're heartfelt, and they're praying the prayers, and the prayers are, explosive, and energizing, and transformative, and it's meaningful, and their life is being transformed, and it's beautiful. They're becoming a better person. It's wonderful. But then all of a sudden, something starts to feel like it's missing. And I say that. It's always weird because I always say it's all of a sudden something seems like it's missing. But that's the way it feels to you. But it really wasn't all of a sudden. It was this kind of a slow kind of movement. And then where all of a sudden you became aware that those songs just aren't moving me anymore. It started off with just a bad Sunday. You're here and you're like, I don't really like these songs. And just you kind of just maybe didn't connect and pretty soon you're like, I don't know, I just, I'm not feeling it at church anymore. And then you maybe try to read the Bible and you're flipping through and you feel that your mind is wandering. And it's almost like all of the things that used to be meaningful, all of the things that used to move you in your spirit, begin to nourish your soul, begin to kind of feel empty. And something's missing. Family night just starts feeling routine. You're like, why am I doing this? Why am I even here? Listen, mark my words. You will come to a place on your spiritual journey where, just like Moses, you will primarily experience God through service. And it's going to happen. And if you refuse that, you say, no, I just want to get back here and sing some more songs. Or if you say, I want to make my life matter and find significance and do. Or if you're stuck in like just learning and doctrine and orthodoxy and this is your focus, you get trapped. You'll come a time in your life where the way God is going to begin to speak to you and give your life meaning is through service. And if you miss that, you're going to miss God. So many people miss the shift. And they're like, God, where are you? So you pray harder and you worship harder and you go get the CD that you listened to back when it first started, you know. You got those CDs that used to be those things that you put them back on, you know, like maybe if I sing those old songs again, or maybe I go back to camp, or maybe if I just want to have those things. But God has not called you back, He's called you forward. So the only way to experience that presence of God is to move forward into the fourth phase of your journey, and that's to serve God. And all the time we say, God, I just want to go back and I want to have what I had back then, and I want to sing the songs again, and I want to say those prayers I used to say again, and God, I want to find you. And I think all along God hears us saying, pardon your servant, Lord, would you just send someone else? And I wonder if God's anger doesn't at times burn against his church when we refuse to be people who serve. I think we're out of time, guys. You need to go ahead and come up here. But here's what I want to ask you. This is what I want to think about as we move into this time of worship. Because we're going to do some phase two things right now. We just did some phase one things. Right? We're going to do some of that right now. They're important. But here's what I want to know. Where are you on your spiritual journey? Where on this progress, where are you currently right now? And listen, if you're not at phase four, that's not bad. Some of you, but hey, you're just exploring, finding some things out. But where are you? And then the more question, important question is, where are you headed? See, phase one, understanding your person, understanding your character, developing who you are, recognizing and answering those deep questions of your soul. Some of you are still wrestling with that. And here's the thing. You may be wrestling with that all of your life, and that's okay. You may always be dealing with the ramifications that happened from your past. Moses was. As we move forward, you'll see in the story that Moses never quite gets over some of the regrets from the past. And that's okay. It's important stuff. Learning God's ways, discipling, studying the Word of God is super important. Maybe some of you kind of get bogged down in that area, though. Like, maybe some of you maybe have found yourself more in phase two, where it's that time of exploring the soul, where you are worship and prayer, and like you crave that intimacy with God, and it's beautiful and it's good, and I hope you never lose your ability to connect to God through that. I hope you never lose the ability to connect to God through open and honest questions that really wrestle with the reality of your life, like Moses did in the wilderness. We never stop asking questions, God, why? But you can get stuck there. You can get stuck where it's just about God. Explain yourself. Show me something new. Touch me. Let me feel it. Zap me with the glory. You know, you can get stuck in the place where that's how you experience God. And you can even get stuck in that third phase where you are enraptured by the idea of doing something. The idea that you're called, the fact that your life has meaning and destiny, and you want to give back for what God has done to you, but never actually doing anything. And here's the thing, all of those first three phases are super important, but phase four is mandatory. Serving God isn't about following God's law. It's about following God's heart. So here's what I invite you this morning as we begin to move into this time where we can pray and find God together at this time of worship. Some of you want to progress to stage four. I know that. Maybe some of you are in stage four right now and you have just no idea what to do. But you can trip yourself up along the way. And if you have felt like your spiritual journey has been difficult recently or lately, I want you to ask, are you trapped somewhere? Here's like maybe you're trapped in step one because you've never let God finish the work of shaping you. Like anybody still have some rough edges that God needs to remove. And this is phase one, yeah. And listen, that's always gonna be there. But listen, if you try to progress without dealing with these things, you're never going to be perfect. But if you just say, oh no, God, you can't touch that area of my life, well, you're just not going to be able to progress. Because phase one's got to come first. Obedience to what God wants of you. And some of you, there are some things where you know you've been disobedient on, and God just is like, okay, I'm still waiting to do this work. And so I know there's some of you, you want to progress to the next in your spiritual journey, but there's still some things that God's asking. He wants to shape who you are, your life, and the way you're living, the way you're doing life is just not working. And so you keep making these decisions that create more tragedy. You keep making decisions that create, you know, all this mess, and you spend all your time trying to tread water and work yourself out of a pit that you've dug for yourself. And God's like, listen, in order to progress, you're going to have to deal with the way you're living life. You can also get trapped, though, in step two. You know, maybe you haven't done the hard work of allowing God to heal your soul. Maybe what happened in step one, the real life things of step one, was so tragic that you're still carrying that wound around. And everyone in your life sees it. You still have problems trusting people. You still have forgiveness that you're holding on to. There's this work of the soul that God is trying to do. And you want to move on to four, but you can't really get past it because you've not really opened your soul that God could do the work he wants to do inside of you. And listen, God cares more about you than what you do. So you got to let God begin to do that healing inside of your soul. You can even get stuck in that third phase because you're waiting for the right moment to start. Like, God, I know I want to do, you want to use me to do something great. God, just, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know how am I going to do it. And listen, if that's the question that you're wrestling with, if you want to do something for God, you just have no idea how to get started, you're going to have to come back next week because that's what we're going to talk about next week. But right now, I'm guessing that there's a lot of us who are ready to step into phase four. Ready to make your life matter, ready to do something in this world that creates meaning and creates those areas of beauty, that ready to live your life in such a way that your life can create life in the world around you. Ready to be like Moses and follow God's heart and not just his law. Father, I just pray that as we come into this time of worship, would you draw us to that place, that beautiful place? And Lord, would you begin to speak to us today and show us, God, the beauty that you long for our life to create in this world? May we be people who serve. God, we have positioned this church our best that we can, that we could serve as much as we can. And I know, God, sometimes that's frustrating and there's so many things on the calendar and there's just things to do and we're always going. But God, we are doing it from this deep conviction that we have been called to be people who serve. I pray, God, that we are up to that challenge. As individuals, may we be up to the challenge. As a church, may we be up to the challenge to move beyond where we are and to go back into this world, be life, to be hope. And Lord, I pray that this morning in Jesus' name. Amen.